everyone. My name is Maria Thomas, and I work for Allianz Research, the global team of economists, strategists, sector advisors, and foresight experts of the Allianz Group, led by Ludovic Subron. Welcome to Tomorrow, a podcast where we'll be talking about our latest analyses of economic and capital market developments, as well as our views on trends affecting risk management. Let's get started. This weekend, more than 400 million European citizens across the 27 EU member states voted to elect the 720 members of the European Parliament. In this episode, we speak with Anna Boata, Head of Economic Research at Allianz Trade, and Senior Economist Jasmine Gershaw about what is at stake and what to expect from the next mandate. Hello, Anna and Jasmine. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Maria.
Hello, Maria.
So now that voting in the EU elections is over, can you tell us why they could be decisive for Europe?
Yeah, that's clearly very important, because we need to remember that this is an election that went across 27 EU member states, electing 720 members of the European Parliament for the new mandate of 5 years, 2024-2029. And of course, I think there is no major surprise in the fact that the biggest political groups, the center-right, the European People's Party, EPP, and the center-left, Socialists and Democrats, SND, they seem to be on track for a stable outcome compared to 2019, as far as we understand at this stage. And probably even a grand coalition could be one of the outcomes. But we, as expected, see that the new European Parliament moved further to the right and actually became one of the most polarized in EU history, as extreme right parties will be able actually to significantly influence more the policy making in the next 5 years, as they have significantly increased the share of their votes. And of course, it will have important consequences on the way policy making will be made, the speed of decisions, and of course, on some very specific topics like security and defense, fiscal, climate. So I think a lot will be at play in the next 5 years.
And before we get into detail of what the next European Parliament could do, what do European voters seem to be looking for?
Yes. So actually, in the run-up to the elections, there was a Eurobarometer survey that was conducted in April 2024. And this actually showed that poverty and health concerns are the voters' top priorities for the elections. And in general, they also said that the economy, job creation, defense and security are also very important issues for potential participants from the European elections. Interestingly, in Austria, this was the only country where the future of Europe actually won out under the participants of the Eurobarometer survey, while climate change was named a top priority only in Sweden, which is very interesting because it was very important for the last European election, also the last commission we had. Interestingly, the Eastern and the Northern European countries, including also Germany, actually said that the debate is actually dominated by defense and security issues. When we then looked at the election manifestos from the pan-European political parties that Anna just mentioned, the voter and the party priorities mostly matched, but they not always did. So the top five priorities or topics that emerged from the parties were actually climate and energy as the top priority, then security and defense, and then competitiveness and growth, followed by foreign policy, fiscal and industrial policies. So for the economic priorities of the pan-European parties, the focus is actually on this competitiveness and on growth, while health and the creation of jobs actually dominated the social concerns of these parties, followed by immigration. And as Anna already mentioned, the new parliament and also the new commission ruling will be ruled more by hard than soft Eurosceptic forces that actually potentially influence these European debates over the coming years. And this could actually alter the EU's legislative priorities. But what we also need to keep in mind is that on the EU level, the majorities and coalitions are a bit different than on the national level. They're more heterogeneous, they're more complex than on the national level. And when it comes to coalitions, it is usually that the political groups coalesce with different parties depending on the topic at hand. So we really have to see, you know, like what will be the priority topics that will put on the agenda for the next 5 years.
This is a big question, so maybe both of you would like to answer. What do you expect from the next EU Parliament? What are the topics that are likely to be at the top of the agenda?
So there are several topics that should be high on the agenda of the new EU Commission and the new EU Parliament. One of them is actually competitiveness, which was very high on the agenda also for the last 5 years, especially focusing on the creation of a competitive digital economy through investments in infrastructure, skills development, and innovation in AI and cybersecurity. But actually, to foster innovation and reduce the risk of aversion, we need simplified regulations, we need enhanced competitiveness, and the EU Commission should actually promote growth, which are very crucial to move forward. One of the major points is also that the EU needs to embrace digitization and AI to actually drive productivity gains, while on the other hand, increasing investment in research and development and education to boost future productivity levels. So for several decades, the European industry has actually predominantly focused on the specialization in mid-tech sectors with a very moderate level of research and development intensity. And so there's quite some path dependence here, and it's challenging actually for the EU to keep pace with high tech industries in other countries, including artificial intelligence or biotech revolutions. So this challenge actually requires more public sector intervention to actually stimulate the research in these new technologies and foster growth in these EU high tech industries. Basically, the industrial competitiveness and integration for Europe, there were several initiatives also over the last couple of years, like the Next Generation EU or Repower EU, but these have had limited impact due to the slow implementation. So actually, to boost competitiveness in the EU Commission should strive for more truly integrated single market, which is one of the bases of the European Union, particularly also in energy, telecommunications, and the financial sector. So especially for the financial sector, a capital markets union has never been more urgent as competition for capital intensifies amid higher interest rates and immense investment requirements. So, for example, single supervision remains out of the scope, probably, but there's an ongoing debate that how we could include measures to reduce the regulatory burden and improve financing conditions for EU business by reviving the securitization of the market. So one possibility would be to have an opt-in option where we actually increase the harmonization, for example, in the insolvency law, in accounting or in listing requirements, and through that actually strengthen supervision.
Thank you, Jasmine. And I think with competitiveness and trade and industrial policy, we have also seen that for the European voters, the defense and security topic was the third most important issue that they wanted to be it to be addressed by policymakers after, again, health and poverty. So 31% of them have put defense and security as equally important issue with economy and job creation. And I think clearly there's not that much choice for the European Union that to increase the defense spending and create the necessary fiscal space, but maybe we can touch upon that later on, to actually permanently rise the defense spending to 2% of GDP or even more. And importantly, so some governments already announced that they aim for that, Germany, France, the UK, for example. But it's true that in the current environment, the debt accumulation and the fiscal leeway that the governments have are clearly not really allowing them to do so. So of course there is a dilemma on what can be done, knowing that we still have a war at really the border of the European Union's, and also in the context of the upcoming US elections, where we know that this topic might be very high on the agenda and on the exchanges with the future US president. So clearly, I think that's something that should be one of the priorities and will probably be also because of the rise of extreme right parties in the European Parliament. And we do need to reallocate resources within the EU budget for common defense spending. That would clearly send a very strong signal And for that, we could, of course, create targeted Eurobonds, for example, that could be used to increase this defense spending and modernize the defense industry as it should, knowing all the deficits that we have accumulated, investment deficits that we have accumulated over the past years. I think that's something that will quite a significant progress in the coming years, knowing that the flip side of that, again, is this limited fiscal space.
Okay, perfect, Anna. So another topic I think that is very much related to kind of security is that we need to secure our supply chains. And the EU has been very active in actually promoting free trade by signing several free trade agreements with key partners over the last couple of years, for example, Japan, Singapore, Vietnam, UK or New Zealand. And even though the EU is one of the most open blocs in the world with about 44% of extra EU trade covered by free trade agreements, the EU also has to move forward and actually further secure supply chains. So one critical point was that they actually went forward with the Critical Raw Materials Act to strengthen supply chains and diversify imports, promoting circularity and sustainability in critical raw materials. And we also lead the pack basically in signing bilateral agreements connected to supply chains related to critical raw materials that are needed for the green transition. So looking forward, we expect more shifts in the geopolitical environment and also more industry policy, meaning more protectionism. And that will basically necessitate that the EU has to review its trade strategy and that upcoming foreign policy, especially on trade, should basically balance traditional free trade agreements that the EU has in mind already negotiated but not yet ratified, for example, with Mercosur, with Australia, or with India, against potential smaller topical agreements that are often easier to reach. So basically, what we expect for the next 5 years is that the already negotiated agreements will be concluded and ratified, which is very important. But then pursuing new free trade agreements, for example, with some African countries for securing crucial critical materials for the green transition will be high on the agenda. We even calculated that looking at trade complementarity, we found that the top trade partners for the EU to actually move forward and pursue free trade agreements would be the United States, Serbia, India, Thailand, China, Malaysia, and Indonesia. But overall, it might be economically favorable to move forward with these agreements, but then sometimes politically infeasible. But we need to diversify further in the supply chains, and the US actually propagates this EU trade policy to basically move in the next 5 years. So what we believe will happen is also that we additionally to these traditional free trade agreements will see more specific bilateral agreements on certain topics like critical raw materials or green energy that can actually complement the EU trade policy. So two things that could be very interesting, and we might actually see that coming, is like these mini trade deals that more or less address technical barriers to trade, such as mutual recognition agreements. We have two of them already high on our agenda, which is between the EU and the US in areas like machinery or clean tech, that could actually significantly reduce certification costs, which are sometimes even higher than the costs from tariffs, but can boost trade flows in these areas and actually have a very positive contribution to trade for the EU and for these countries. And this would be something that we expect to see more going forward for the next 5 years. Then related to that is also climate issues. I mean, I already mentioned that with the critical raw materials, which are necessary for the green transformation. So for the climate part, we will not expect to see much more than we already saw for the last 5 years. So the EU has moved forward and has become basically the area in the world or the region in the world with the most ambitious climate targets, with the European Green Deal, with the goal of achieving net zero greenhouse gas emission by 2050. And this is already enshrined in legally binding European climate law. So basically, this is already set, this is already on the table. And what we expect to see here is basically that this now has to be put and implemented by the companies, by the different governments, by the people to actually reach the target that the EU has set out. But we don't expect that the EU will move to a much more ambitious space on the climate front.
Yeah, and actually, I would complement your conclusion, Jasmine, on the energy market. And it's true that if we talk about competitiveness, industrial policy, we need to complete the energy market reform. And for that, of course, there were positive steps that have been taken. I can mention, of course, the electricity and gas market reform that has been finalized in May 2024. But it took some time, right? Because it was enacted by the parliament, end of 2023. So clearly, it takes too long, for having a proper energy market. And, we need a clear plan. We do need a true European grid plan. And that will cost us, more than 500 billion. Actually, the, European Commission estimates that, at 584 billion euro. Of investments that are necessary for electricity grids in the decade. So clearly a lot of time has been lost because these investments have not been done. And a lot will need to be ramped up in the coming years if we really want to be competitive compared to other ongoing developing trade and manufacturing hubs, right? And we can mention, of course, competition from Southeast Asia, but also hubs in Latin America. And I think, yeah, it's something that we should keep in mind because it's about the grid. It's about the cross-border transmission infrastructure, which should double in the next 6 years. And clearly we need to find a reform that will, help to simplify, the introduction of capacity markets, and allowing therefore the necessary investments and the flexibility of the market. So it's of course an ambitious reform, and unfortunately it will take time, and we are rather on the cautious side before we call it completed in the next 5 years. But this is a must do. Of course, this is a priority for the next European Commission and Parliament. So we will clearly scrutinize that very closely in the coming years just to see what progress has been made in order to assess also progress that can be made when it comes to increasing European companies' competitiveness and supporting a true industrial policy. And of course, talking about fiscal capacity and fiscal policy, I think we do need to acknowledge the fact that we are in tough times when it comes to fiscal metrics. Fiscal deficits are much above 3% of GDP. They are surprising on the upside, the planned budgets. Public debt ratios continue to increase. Of course, one reason for that is also the interest rate environment. But there is a market reality, which is that market participants will look very closely into the budget and assessing the credibility of those fiscal plans. So it's not an easy job for the national government. And this is why we do need to consider fiscal policy as a strategic element, because we can't just look into the rules. We do need to take it as a European or take it at the European level in order to also reduce the burden on national economies. Just today, the fiscal policy adjustments are going to cost gross. So we estimate that at -1 point that is taken off the European GDP growth cumulatively in 2024 and 2025. Knowing that we anyway had zero growth. So clearly additional efforts will be an issue and will cost additional points of growth. And this is why we should look into a central fiscal capacity at the European level in order to support some strategic industries. But we know that politically this will be complicated to go through. I mentioned already the targeted Eurobonds for specific projects. if it's in defense, if it's in supporting the climate transition. Again, if we think about the numbers, investment related to the climate transition are estimated at more than 3% of GDP. Then if we want to increase the spending in defense and security, that's more than 2% of GDP. So we need to have a strategy to find those necessarily 5% of GDP in additional investments. And of course, we need to keep some flexibility at the national level. But again, we need to think at the European fiscal policy and how can it become strategic and support all this investment needs in the coming years.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find the full report we just spoke about on our website. We'll leave a link in the show notes. If you'd like to discover more of our research, you can also follow the Ludonomics newsletter on LinkedIn. We'll leave a link down below for that too. If you like the podcast, please send it to any of your friends who might like it too, and leave us a rating and a review. We'd love to hear your feedback. In the meantime, stay tuned for the next episode.